you want a picture of the future, imagine a boot stamping on a human face forever.
There are former Trump fans all over the internet who are burning their Make America Great hats, which is very scary because it means they've discovered fire.
It has to do with the fact that in the Soviet Union, if you want to buy an automobile, there is a 10-year wait.
We have constructed a governmental welfare scheme, which has been a machine for producing poor people.
I asked you about Russian interference in the 2016 presidential election.
I think that all government is a waste of taxpayer money.
Hello and welcome to the Daily Circus Podcast. This is Zed, and I am joined tonight, as always, by a member of the Deep State, Red.
Is that me? I would certainly never admit to that. Am I supposed to admit to that?
I think that's exactly what somebody from the deep state would say.
Well, I'm not from the deep state, so I don't identify with that. That's not my gender pronoun.
Oh, man. All right. And we have a special guest with us tonight here on the Daily Circus Podcast, Nick Aris, who is working on a book. We're going to be talking to him some about that. Nick, do you want to say hi to the people?
Hi. Yeah. And thanks for inviting me on the show, Zed. It was a very synchronistic encounter that we've had, and that you guys have this kind of mission behind your show, and I'm extremely excited to be on.
Yeah, so some of the things that Nick is working on, we had a conversation earlier today. He's working on the polarization of America and how do we depolarize? And that is something that is very close to the hearts of Red and I, as you know, one of the reasons we've talked about starting this podcast basically is because, you know, we believe everybody's caught up in this big polarization storm, and, you know, it's basically just taking over everyone's lives and destroying politics.
No, that's not true. I think more polarization is good. In fact, I've ordered 12 battle axes and mailed them around the world just to see what would happen.
All right. Well, Red's fired. I don't think I technically have the power to do that since I'm 50% of the vote. So if we ever need to fire each other, I don't know what's going to happen.
It's a very polarized podcast. So you can we'll each get one battle axe and we'll see what happens. Winner take all.
There we go.
Battle axes are a good angle. I think that it'll get the argument over quickly.
Yeah. All right. Well,
you know, someone will win. The other side has to lose.
Well, let's move into talking about the book that you're writing, Nick. Do you want to give us sort of an overview, kind of just, you know, what inspired you to write this book and what are you writing the book about?
Well, it's kind of a long story, but to keep it short, I'm a philosophy major who also has been in the entertainment industry since I was about 19. I've been an actor and a screenwriter, and I really kind of found my place, I feel, writing books is as a writer, because that's where you kind of I feel like that's where you take control of the narrative from a bunch of the financial people. And so that's really where the interesting battleground is at, because you can be an actor and say words that someone else wrote your entire life. And then, you know, where does it lead? And it kind of seems like it leads in the direction that our culture's been going in, which isn't very positive.
Well, that is certainly true. I don't know. Are you a fan of American Horror Story?
I've worked on the show.
Oh,
I've seen
really?
A few episodes. Yeah.
Okay. Well, Red and I often make fun of season 7, which
I'm not as caught up on it as you guys might be.
Well, season 7 is on Netflix now if you want to check that out. But season seven.
Just Google Cheeto Face.
Yeah.
I think you'll get there.
So season 7 pretty much starts out with the whole Trump getting elected and the world is going insane because Trump got elected. And then there's this guy who mashes up
a
bunch of Cheetos. Oh yeah. This is in the show. A guy mashes up a bunch of Cheetos and covers his face in them to make his face orange. And then it's going between like all these different scenarios of people like watching election results. And, you know, there's like this conservative gun loving family that's like jumping up and down and screaming for joy. And then there's like this gay couple with their friends and they're like saying that they won't be able to stay married and all this stuff. It is just absolutely insane.
Yeah, No, I mean, that's actually not too bad of a segue into kind of what has inspired me to write the next book I'm working on here, which is called Depolarized. And it basically just stems from trying to, like, as a story artist, I'm trained in really the art of drama. And so I feel like, but I'm also a philosophy major, so it gives me kind of a unique, more sort of substantive angle on judging media and being a media analyst in general, and a political analyst, really, because everything is becoming so politicized in the media that it's like, it's almost one and the same thing at this point. So thinking about it in terms of kind of an artist and realizing that the level that it's really all operating on, at least the level that I've experienced it gets controlled at in Hollywood, is social engineering. And so knowing all of that, my purpose became to study how does it get so polarized and why. And I started writing this book, and it talks about everything from, like, Carl Jung, the deep psychological archetypes, the hero's journey. But it also, I get into tribalism and belief and really deep, heady things that kind of, that's kind of what I specialize in, is thinking about the really big picture stuff. And so if you ever feel like you want to bring me down to earth and explain something, I encourage you let me know. But thinking about it in these terms, I feel like I get a really unique angle on really the entire media, politics, where it's all heading. And it's allowed me to be pretty predictive in the books that I've written. And I think very timely and relevant to what's going on.
So I think that's a good segue here to reuse your word. To the book that I sped read through the first seven chapters of, and I can't recall the title. What was the title of that book?
Is that the one I have out now? Sorry.
Yeah, so that was the one that I saw on your Twitter.
Yeah, so that's a novel called The Manifesto Murders. And it really, it's like a murder mystery, because, I mean, obviously that's a very marketable angle. But also it keeps things visceral enough where you can communicate pretty large ideas to people and they'll still understand them. And it's like a fun, entertaining story that you kind of weave the ideas into, kind of like Dan Brown. And that's really what got the ball rolling for me in terms of Depolarized, is because the more I was thinking like an FBI detective who's trying to track a killer into the deep state and figure out what's really going on with the media and these agencies and big tech, and how there's kind of this single power structure that's all interwoven together. And it's I just started to have these revelations about what's really going on, and wanting to put them into words and articulate it in a way that more and more people can begin to understand. Because, yeah, go ahead.
So I think a lot of people largely just run on emotion. That's kind of my perspective, that I would like us to be rational and logical and try to cut our way through all the craziness that's happening and just try to understand it. But it, from my perspective, most people are just kind of running on emotions. We're just kind of operating on our feelings and just trying to feel good all the time. And so I don't think there's, especially in the modern society, I don't know that there's a lot of time for thought. So so trying to embed deep ideas into a novel is something that I'd heard before. Russ Roberts is the host of Econ Talk, and he's talked about this a couple times. I think he tried to do something like this for basically Austrian economics, trying to get that in there.
Wow. Okay.
Well, I think
I can think of more exciting subject matter.
Yeah, Econ Talk is a good podcast. Red turned me onto it, but I have to say there are some times when I'm just like, you know, I can't listen to this right now. It can get dry, but it really is a good podcast. So check that out, listeners.
Mm-hmm. You know, you got to be in the mood.
You definitely do. One thing that you kind of touched on there, and I think goes to Red's point some, we talked about that you think big picture. And I think, you know, Red was saying that we're all so busy. And most people, I think most people don't think about the big picture. And it's not because they're not able to. It's literally just because they don't have time. I mean, people are so busy running kids here, running kids there, doing jobs, that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
You know, at the end of the day, no one thinks about politics or, you know, what the end result of mm-hmm. some of this stuff might be, or, you know, even the thought that they could have someone on the ticket that isn't a Republican or a Democrat. And most people instantly dismiss third party candidates. And that is a huge mistake.
Yeah. So, I mean, and I've painted all that kind of into the narrative of the whole book, how I introduce it. And that's exactly right. But I feel like, getting big picture, we're living it now, like, what is it, the 30th year of really where the internet has been publicly available. The military had it before that, but where it's really been like, you know, you used to dial up on AOL when we, I don't know how old you guys are, but I'm 25.
Oh yeah. No, I totally remember dialing up.
Yeah.
And I miss those weird sounds. I miss the noise.
Generation that has had the information age exploding our entire adult lives. And there's going to be these consequences to, so history, and moving to Hollywood really kind of made me understand it at kind of a gut level of how information has been bottled up by just a handful of companies and special interest groups. You had the big five publishing companies, you had the big four or five movie studios. And now all of that has been even more consolidated. And, but simultaneously with that consolidation of power that controls the media and the narrative, you also have the internet exploding and independent media like this podcast, literally, like so many YouTube channels, like so many things going on where we're starting to have longer form discussions. And there's a huge market opening up for this because people are actually starving for understanding and meaning about all the chaos. Like, why is it so intense right now? And why is it like the left versus the right, red versus blue, you know, like, why can't we somehow get beyond these really kind of childish templates that guide the conversation? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh no, it totally does. And you're right. It really is childish. If you think about it, you know, to sort of memeify it, you know, the old Halo red versus blue videos, that guy, I mean, yeah. It really does feel like some days that we're just in some kind of video game and it's just, you know, shoot at the other side. And, you know, then there's, mm-hmm. you know, a small independent group of people like us that are like in the middle getting fired over constantly, like trying to stick our heads up and be like, hey, guys, no, wait, we don't have to just shoot each other. And then we get shot.
And then that tweet gets no likes and you're like, okay. So and, it's a pattern that humanity is in. And so being a philosopher can sometimes, the joke of it is you get kind of alienated in your own head about things. But that's why I like being a storyteller as well, is because it keeps me in touch with the human side to things and the more visceral angle into understanding things. And that's what I think the Manifesto Murders is kind of hitting a nerve right now with a lot of people. It's getting a lot of enthusiastic reviews. And I think part of the reason why is I understand kind of both ends. Like, we're trying to make the media more substantive, but there's this crazy kinetic power of the energy that we're in and the combativeness and the drama and this rising stakes and the tension and the, you know, that's the magnet on our attention. And so what depolarized is kind of from the perspective of a writer and an entertainer who is I'm just kind of an anomalous sort of guy at this point. You know, I'm really deep into philosophy. And from that perspective, I feel like I'm able to kind of articulate things in a way that it's obvious. It's like hanging there. It's almost the low hanging fruit, but at the same time, no one's picking it. You know what I mean? The New York Times is writing articles about the next civil war. The Washington Post, you know, that like this is becoming mainstream, that we're in a battle for control over the country between these two well-defined sides.
And with
Depolarized, I try to bring in a more historical, a little bit bigger perspective about really the story of how the human brain is being targeted and controlled. And it is a revolution. It's 100%. If you could get this out into the narrative and it took off and people understood it, it would 100% be a revolution. But it's not a grievance revolution. It's not like, you're angry at some specific person or place or thing. The pattern that we're in is so much bigger than any one individual corporation or organization or, you know, individual of any kind. It's like it has its own momentum.
And let me clarify something there real quick for the listeners, because I know some of them are going to be sitting out there right now thinking, oh, no, you mind control. When you were talking about the human brain being controlled, I want to make it clear to listeners that you're not talking about some sort of U.S. government.
MK Ultra. Yeah, no.
Mind control ray.
Propaganda. It's propaganda. It's basic. You know, if you listen to something Professor Noam Chomsky is saying, he's saying it probably in more academic language. But I mean, this is influence. This is influence over the human mind, because they have control over these media outlets. And I think people instinctively understand that.
Well, I think you just look marketing, right? I think we at our core, we would like to kind of distance these things from how they affect us. But if just basic marketing, we have a massive amount of money that pours in. Just every day we're spending millions of dollars on marketing. And what is marketing?
And what are
marketing.
They doing when they do that marketing? They're targeting your brain in a way, because they're trying to influence your decisions. And that's where
they know that. There's been studies and there's science behind it.
It's not a special gun. It's just it's a field of study. I took a class in it in college, right? It's not some hypno babble space magic. It's there's studies, you can read them.
In a way, it's almost worse, right? Because you don't realize it's happening. You know, if there was literally some guy with a hypno ray, we could look at that guy and be like, hey, everybody get that guy. But when they're just putting it in commercials and books and, and you know, now you have native advertising to where they're, you know, unless you really well versed in it, you don't know that you're even reading an ad.
You guys are spot on. You guys are both catching on. I hope your audience gets it too. Like that's amazing. This is kind of, so I guess big picture again is the turning point that we're at. So the age of information, right? It's only been really for the last 30 years. So they were able to control all the information according to kind of this historical pattern that got set up, which it's really simple to mimetize it, right? It's divide and conquer.
And we're speaking, and you're speaking in large abstract terms, right? Where you're not saying they controlled every piece of information, right?
In the book, I also get pretty concrete and precise in the examples of how it all developed. But it is hard for even me to hold that all in my working memory. So yeah, I'm speaking abstractly, but it's pretty clear that there was a historical military tactic of dividing populations into smaller groups than the group enacting the strategy. And if you look at America today, I mean, God bless our souls, but we're pretty much just being divided and conquered. Like, we're not even putting up a fight, right?
Well, yeah, and it all happens so natively that, you know, we don't understand it's happening, and it just allows. So basically, the way that I see this happening is both sides of the political aisle. And we got some mic noise out there or something if you're adjusting your mic. So you've got the Republicans and the Democrats that are just using very polarizing issues like abortion and gun control to just keep
hot button issues,
both sides fighting with each other, so that you don't pay attention to the smaller issues that really there's so many small issues that end up affecting your lives that we don't even hear about that they're
we just passed a law that has a huge impact to what happens to nuclear research for the next, you know, 10 years. I've read nothing about it.
Because it has nothing to do with abortion or gun control.
Yeah, it's not the Daily Circus.
Exactly. He gets the name.
You're giving me chills, because these conversations are usually a lot harder to dovetail into meaning, and we're doing a pretty fine job right now. So it's just like creating a new narrative where our generation is going to be the ones that Yeah, like if we just showed up on CNN right now, they would be looking at us like we were an alien species, right? Talking.
Oh,
like,
they would cut to commercial.
You said would have gotten the, you know, the cut off signal, but and
yeah,
they would have
gone to commercial break and tried to sell you Allegra, you know.
Well, I mean, someone's got to take care of allergies. I think that's
does.
Nothing
against Allegra, absolutely not.
If you want to support us, Allegra, please come on in here. We've got nothing against Big Pharma. Yeah. No, we have a lot against Big Pharma.
I had some Kratom tea right before the podcast, and I haven't even killed anyone yet, Red.
I don't know. No, we're never. Nobody's ever going to give us an ad. That's not.
Yeah. No, they're not.
Don't sell yourself short.
The thing is, you know, you've got both sides, and then there's money just being thrown at them, both of them. There are huge corporations that contribute to both political parties, and why do they do that? Because they want to make sure that when
they're sowing the division. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. They're sowing the division, and they're also, it's an insurance policy for if the other one gets in power, because they will eventually, you know, they just. They're writing the policy, and they're telling these politicians what to do. And, you know, and it is very few corporations. I don't know. Somewhere along the lines, we just threw the part about no monopolies in capitalism away. And we were like, hey, monopolies are cool now. Everybody get your monopoly on.
Yeah, I think that was actually pretty recent. Like, they were doing trust busts against AT&T in the late 80s, early 90s. It seems like big tech corporations are being busted up. I don't remember any specific examples. Maybe one of you guys does.
Yeah,
in
Microsoft.
Late 90s, early 2000s. Yeah.
Yeah,
and
Microsoft.
It's very recent that they're just – it's just a run with the bulls. Like it's becoming wild west.
Yeah, it's insane. I think – so Facebook bought Instagram, I think. And then who does Twitter own? Twitter owns somebody pretty big too. So it's not just tech, but just overall, our entire economy is becoming entirely consolidated. It's very scary. And if fear motivates people, hey, let's get scared out there, because the consolidation in the market is going to be bad for everyone. And it really is across the board. We have market consolidation. In a lot of ways, it's our government agencies are pushing us into this paradigm where you see especially in healthcare, hospitals are having to consolidate in order to basically effectively meet regulations. And so it's good that people are seeing it, because tech is so like Twitter and Facebook and Instagram are so in your face. Google is like every day you see that, you interact with it. And so in a way, this is almost a blessing, because if we see it happening, we're gonna realize that we're gonna do something about it. Because most of the effects of market consolidation are not visible. Most of the effects are a reduction in competition, which reduces research and increases prices, or stops the reduction in price. And it's just something we never see. So it's really great that we can, honestly, it sounds sad, but it's really great that we're able to see some of this, because this is a plague that's kind of eating away at our society.
Yeah. And that's extremely current. Have you guys heard about the executive order that Donald Trump drafted to take action, antitrust investigation action against the big tech monopolies?
So I heard something about this. But I don't have all the details.
He drafted it, yeah.
See, yeah, he hasn't signed it yet because there's some handler somewhere that won't let him sign it. I guarantee that's going to be one of those things that disappears off his desk. They'll just what they'll do is they'll just turn on some video of him getting made fun of right before he's about to sign it, and then he'll forget all about that and start an angry Twitter rant. And America,
that was it. That was in the article, wasn't it?
Do you think that's what's going on? He's just forgetting about these things and he remembers like a week later?
Somebody said that. They said that they pulled stuff off of his desk until he forgot about it, right?
Wow.
Yeah, that was in the op-ed in the New York Times of whoever, the anonymous person that's supposedly a senior official in the Trump administration, basically said that, you know, it was in the Woodward book. You know, that the Woodward book said that Gary Cohn I believe is who it was, goes in and just like when there's something they don't want or something they think's crazy on his desk, they just yank it away. And now, while I think probably some of that probably does need to go, some of it probably should stay there. I mean, but it's sick that we're manipulating the president, regardless of who the president is. And this is coming from someone, I do not like Donald Trump, but I still think it's bad that we're manipulating the president.
So where are you at, Zed? Where are you at on the deep state issue? Because that's become such a buzzword now, but I've been writing about it for like, God, going on like 7 years.
Well, so let's talk about, let's just go ahead and start talking about the deep state and kind of switch over to that topic. So I guess, first of all, let's start off by, when you say deep state, can you define that for me?
Right. So I would define it as the permanent government that stays in place regardless of elections. And also I would define it as a very deep, like, culture within the government that you see it in someone, an old boy like Jeff Sessions, where it's just like, we got these guys, they've sent these conspiratorial messages. You know, we got him on camera, Project Veritas, we got this, we got that. And it's like, he can't move on them because it's the culture. It's this very corrupted, decaying sort of thing that existed because it wasn't the internet age. It wasn't the age of information. We didn't know about it.
So,
and now that it's all in everyone's faces, I think what the deep state really is kind of America awakening to how the system always was. And it is real. There's truly these conspirators within our government who think, I'm going to be here. Jason Chaffetz just wrote the book, The Deep State. I guess everyone's got their deep state book now, huh? But so he called it the B team. I'm going to be here. I've been here. I'm going to be here after you. And I'm not going anywhere. And these guys were around during the Bushes and the Obama years, which if you guys study that time in history, there were a lot of really weird things going on, like Lois Lerner and the IRS going after conservatives, or
those are my two favorite presidents you just mentioned. I think
Bush and Obama, really?
Yeah. No. Those guys needed to go.
You hit me with the sarcasm.
His sarcasm is on fire tonight.
You got to have your detector way up.
Yeah, I got to crank mine up for sure.
All right. So,
what it is it's the government that is like this deep apparatus that thinks it's in control, aims to be in control, and is openly conspiring against the will of the Democratic Republic as it just plays out in elections and things. They're starting to become so arrogant that they think that elections and stuff don't matter. And that's what's going on with Trump.
So if you define the deep state in that way, I would say yes, then there is a deep state, simply because there are all of these.
But it goes as deep as you want to. If you want to keep digging, there's a lot going on, man, that you can't really prove or disprove, but that there's so much corroboration throughout history. In things like the Bilderberg Group, the Bohemian Grove, the Council on Foreign Relations. I mean,
I remember when the Bilderberg Group.
You want to get, because these guys really have a ton of power.
I remember when the Bilderberg Group wasn't real. So when I was in college, I think the Bilderberg Group was a conspiracy theory, and people would just, they would post about it online. You'd be like, what is wrong with these people? What is this Bilderberg group? And you'd Google it, and there was nothing out there. And it would say this was for conspiracy theorists. Yeah. And literally, Alex Jones basically doxed them into existence.
Yeah.
So that was Bohemian Grove, I think.
Both of them. He did both of them.
I actually have, I won't say who, but I have a very close acquaintance who has been up there and seen the whole thing.
So let me say this about that. So would you define the deep state as sort of those employees that just never go away and are there between administrations? I do believe that exists. What I don't think exists is like a group of, you know, seven men in a back room controlling everything. Now, when it comes to Bohemian Grove and that kind of thing, I'll tell you what I think that is. And it's the old man version of a fraternity. And I think that they're sort of using that just to sort of get that same, you know, bro culture, if you will, between old men. And they do those rituals to Moloch and whatever, because it's something that's been done and they've done it for, you know, their grandpappy did it and whatever. And it's,
you know, it's actually the voice of Walter Cronkite.
Yeah. Yeah. I have heard that. And I don't think it's actually that they're communing with underworld demons or anything of that nature. I think they're just old men that are doing a thing that everyone has been done because it was done before them. And
so
and
I guess I
they're
would
there
say that it's
because of power.
It's not a bad instinct. It's a very practical kind of way of looking at it. And if you want to get impractical, you can dig deep and learn about the occult and how very few people actually get to that point where they are aware of what the occult is and how it gets back to the other kind of bump in the road.
Believe me, I'm very educated in Thelema and the OTO, and I'm deep in there, man.
You just don't think it works.
Yeah,
right?
I don't think any of it works. I think it works in the sense that they all get together, and they may even believe that it works, and they're just sort of, if you will, chaos magicking it into existence through the fact that, you know, they're just literally, you know, it's working
LARPing.
Because they are LARPing and it's working because they want it to work. And they all have a bunch of money. I think if you took a bunch of poor destitute guys from trailer parks and had them do the same thing, they would have far less results.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree. I don't know that there's any real magical ritual. I don't think, but if they're in there doing these rituals, like I know for a fact, Skull and Bones, they get you in a coffin and make you drink a hollowed out skull full of red wine. And
oh, I'm sure.
I mean, there's weird rituals going on.
And part of that exists so that they all have that bond of having done it. And then also they all have something on each other. And it's sort of like the mob. Mm.
So I don't know how we got so deep into this, but
well, I think we were defining deep state.
The overall, the deep. So these are all the things that I think actually hurt the conversation about the deep state is because, you know what I mean? It's like falling into quicksand.
Oh, yeah.
And all of a sudden, the whole conversation just seems like it's gone off the deep end, you know?
And let's be honest, it's a whole lot more exciting to talk about a bunch of crazy old dudes and Walter Cronkite worshiping an owl statue than it is to talk about Bob from accounting that shredded that one document. And I think that's what the real deep state is.
Yeah, so I think what we're talking about now is kind of more like the shadow government, which is sort of like if the deep state has a deep state or an oversight committee type of thing. And I think that undoubtedly exists. How effective it is or how much power and control it actually has, I don't know. But did you see the WikiLeaks that got leaked that talked about the Seventh Floor group in the FBI?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we talked a little bit about the Seventh Floor. And
actually in quotes, it said the shadow government.
Yeah, we did see that.
So why don't you
out of Podesta's WikiLeaks now. So that's how real it is.
So Zed doesn't believe that the Seventh Floor has any power.
Yeah. I I think he's using that sarcastically because let's say I was high up in the government. You know, if you just took, I'll give you an example. If you took the messages back and forth between Red and I, and tried to construct some sort
of... Don't do that.
But if you did do that, and you tried to construct some sort of meaningful thing that could tell you what we believe or what is happening, it would sound crazy. You would think that, you know, because we're constantly joking, and we have our little inside jokes and that kind of thing, and no one would be able to understand it. And I think that's kind of what's going on here.
And it actually helps polarize the narrative, too, because people, like you said, they're going about their lives. They're super busy. They're, you know, technology has us all very distracted, and not very many people have the time to think about it and connect these dots. And so it's a lot easier just to say, to lump all of that together and say, that's all crazy. And like, I don't, you know, like if I ever accidentally pitch the Manifesto murders, for example, to the wrong person, they go into this very sunken place, you could say, where they're denying any kind of a shadow of a possibility that any of the type of the deep state talk could be real.
Yeah. I mean, so for me, based on that, and I would hope that you would kind of come down to the same conclusion over there on your side of the fence, is that based on that leak, we should have an investigation of the seventh floor, and it should be made totally public, right?
Oh, yeah, you? We should have hundreds of investigations. Yeah.
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 Oh, well, would you agree with that, Zed?
Oh, totally. Like, you know, I want everything investigated. If it, you know, if it comes out and it's, you know, slightly crazy and, you know,
500 hot dogs.
Yeah. Whatever. Yeah. 500 hot dogs. I think probably that has something to do with the something similar to the Franklin Credit Union scandal about the hot dogs. I don't know. Are you in on that one, Nick? Are you familiar with the Franklin Credit Union scandal?
I don't touch the pizza gate. I don't. Well, so
yeah. Okay. Well, Franklin Credit Union scandal
becoming depolarized is because I actually worked through a lot of this, believe it or not, with my mom, who she's actually super up to date with a lot of media stuff, but her outlet is MSNBC. So I know when they've constructed a narrative device from that perspective where it's being misused and it's, there's no way forward from there.
Yeah, because it's like it's radioactive, right? This is the Sandy Hook thing, right?
Yeah, it is. It's totally radioactive. They create this, and that's what Alex Jones is now. Actually, he's a giant no go zone, and kind of like a canary in the coal mine. But it's you can't talk about it because they pinned him so tight to a few stupid things he said, and now he represents that in the popular culture. You know what I mean? In the narrative that they've constructed and that they have all this momentum behind, you can't even talk about certain things because it's not productive.
Well, and that's kind of a bigger problem we have in society, I think, is that we've bought into this idea that there are some topics that you shouldn't be allowed to discuss. Yeah. Right? Because when you make that first leap, you shouldn't be allowed to discuss this because it's horrible to the Sandy Hook children, right? We had an episode on it. So it's just a horrible thing that people would talk about this, but it should be allowed to happen because that's how ideas are challenged. And that's how we move forward. And when we moved that bar, we said no Sandy Hook discussion. Well, that wasn't good. But then we moved that bar and we said no Alex Jones. And we're just going to keep moving that bar until
So what I wonder, and I truly wish I had just like a crystal ball and it could tell me how aware most people are that standards that have been in place since the dawn of this country are just like this year starting to change and get all loose and wonky. And how much do people care? And what's going on with our brain that we're so preoccupied and overstimulated by this like thing they've created, this polarizing, you know, matrix, that now they're able, like the frogs in the boiling pot, it's happening so slowly that we don't realize that this is what tyranny looks like when they start, you know, forming natural monopolies and then deciding who has access to, you know, who gets to say what to who and who gets to have access to the market in what way and stuff. That's what Stalin, and it gets way overset, but that's what the Nazis did. It is. I mean, in the Warsaw ghettos, that's what it essentially was, is disallowing certain segments of the population rights that the rest of the population has. And so, like, we're living in a wild time where this is all happening so fast. And I honestly wonder how many people even know what's going on.
Well, it's welfare and retweets, right? We don't have time to think because we're retweeting everything, and we're basically we're able to hit our minimum level of subsistence because the government has provided the base floor safety net, and so it's bread and circuses in the 21st century.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Well, you know, and this, your point there that you were making with the natural monopolies and you know, censorship, if you will. Let's kind of go into that topic and start talking about, I guess, shadow banning. Let's touch on that. And then also let's talk about the Alex Jones thing and, you know, Alex getting basically deplatformed. I don't really want to say censored.
Well, it's not just Alex Jones, right? Now it's that actor, James Woods, got kicked off Twitter.
Oh, is James Woods off?
James Woods got knocked off. And
missed that.
Who's that guy? He floats around Alex Jones. Is it Anthony Cumia? And who's that comedian? So it's not just Alex Jones at this point. He's just the straw man. He's the big distracting red herring to look at while these really incredible, unprecedented things are going on. And so, Zed, you agree that there's some degree of shadow banning going on, or how do you feel about that?
So the shadow banning, I'm not sold on the shadow banning because I don't know how you can prove it. So I guess with shadow banning, you know, somebody feels like they're tweeting and it's just going into the void, or they're, you know, sending something out on Facebook and it just goes into the void, whatever. I mean, a straight up ban is very easy to prove. Shadow banning is, I guess, nigh impossible to prove unless you can actually get into the company. So I don't know how we would prove that shadow banning is happening. And that's just that's why I have a hard time getting on board with the shadow banning.
First, let's start with how do you define shadow banning? And
yeah, sure.
A great example of the nuance there is in Twitter's own written statement to when all of these the president made those tweets and it became a big news story. Twitter came out with their official statement, and it's actually a marvel, and people should go read it, that they're playing these little semantic games where they're defining shadow banning in the most strict sense, that like the account, you got to go read it. But basically, it also says in fine print, although it may be more difficult for people to find your tweets. And that's really all that we're saying that shadow banning is. It's not that you're not on Twitter or that a few people, when you tweet out, it doesn't come up in their feed. But it's that it's not an organic news feed anymore where whoever is tweeting whatever, it's going out in the order that it's tweeted. And it's extremely, extremely easy for them now to take advantage of that gray area. And they have filters. This is all admitted that target keywords. If you saw the movie Snowden, you know how precise that technology, that has been around for a long time. And when it's extremely easy for them to kind of dial that back and let less people see this and more people that type of thing.
I mean, basically it would just be like a reverse search engine, pretty much. I mean, they're just taking it away instead of bringing it to you.
So if you're tweeting something about the deep state, that's like a very obvious thing that would be shadow banned. Because it's become a left-right issue. It probably shouldn't be, but it has. And
yeah, it should absolutely not be a left-right issue, big right? Time,
but so, it has become one.
Well, I guess let's talk about this because there's a couple of problems that I have with it, and number one, just being we've backed ourselves into this corner because Twitter is a private company. So, I mean, if Twitter wants to just straight up shadow ban all kinds of different things, how is it wrong from Twitter? I mean, I believe it's wrong to do that because I believe everybody should be heard. But if Twitter wants to do it, why can't they?
So, and the best explanation that I've heard is that, and I'm not an expert in like, you know, this type of law or anything, but when someone publishes something terrible on Twitter, Twitter's not liable for that because they technically aren't a publisher. They are a public forum, and there's a tax incentive and a regulatory incentive for that. And the way that they have all these social media platforms set up, it's that way. So they're not actually a publisher. They're actually not a private company. They're a public forum, and that's why they have that protection. Incredible terrorist beheadings can be on their platform and they're not legally responsible for it. And so what's weird is now this is an emergence of the last year or two that it's undeniable that they've started to put their foot on the scale in a more political manner. And so which way is it? Are you a publisher or are you a public forum? And if you're a public forum, then you should 100% be under the First Amendment of the Constitution of the United States when in the United States.
Well, otherwise, sure.
Zed, what is it? What is it otherwise? How is it not just election engineering on a grand level? Like they're sitting there, you know, screaming about Russia. And it's possible. I think it's absolutely true that all the campaigns are playing dirty and talking to foreign countries. And like, I'm sure that that's there. But why is it all of a sudden this big deal? And I think it's because they're distracting away from what's really going on, which is these platforms have more power to control the public opinion than anything that we've ever imagined could exist.
So I guess here's kind of my problem with this. So I want to point out, so I am what I would consider a free speech absolutist in the sense that I even believe you should be able to stand up in a crowded theater and yell fire without any repercussion. Wow. Like, I go that far with free speech. So if I had my druthers, where the internet would go and what would be required. So Facebook, Twitter, doesn't matter. If you are using the internet to get your business to people, basically anything and everything should be allowed to be posted there, and it cannot be taken down. So where you get, sort of into this is, we have, like, if I'm in a, let's say I'm somewhere, like, let's say I'm in my house and I'm saying something that you really don't like and it offends you or whatever. I mean, you can just leave. And so it's the same way on Facebook. You can just ignore that person that's saying. But
what about the legal definition of a natural monopoly?
So this is the problem, is we have these monopolies and, we've allowed them to have all this power. I'm talking about sort of my perfect world where, anybody should be basically, like, the company should be required to not remove whatever it is you put up and to treat it just like anything else, to basically blind packets, if you will. Like, no internet speech is treated any differently than anything else. This is the way I would like for the internet to be. The problem is we've created these monopolies and they have all this power. And, we've backed ourselves into this corner of now they control it. And we have these rules set up so that they are privatized. And I understand that Twitter, you're saying it's a public forum because of the libel situation that they're in. But I don't believe that legally that requires them just to treat everything the same. I think they can still sort of make decisions about what they do and don't want people to see.
To just kind of think progressively about it then. Being in an unprecedented situation, do you feel comfortable moving forward with some interpretation of the Sherman Antitrust Act that could be implemented to sort of get the internet you don't want it to go under government control, but at a certain point, what choice do we have if we're going to have abusive private monopolies?
So Red and I have talked about this, and I think we came up with the perfect solution. We want an amendment that says, basically, if you are connected to the internet, anything and everything goes, and you can't, nothing can be removed. All data must be treated the same, and then boom, problem solved.
Yeah, that's kind of idealistic. What about the dark web?
That is a kind of idealistic.
That's extremely idealistic. I don't think that's.
I mean, I'm an idealist, but even I got to draw the line.
I don't think that's ever going to happen.
I don't think that should happen because of the obvious, but.
It's pretty clear that the solution is exactly what we've discussed, right? It's that you do not have one company that is somehow responsible for, 60 to 90% of all communication. That's clearly not a good system to have. The fundamental problem we have is that basically these big players are not responding to market incentives. I don't know why. So Twitter is alienating. It doesn't make any sense, but Twitter is alienating half.
It's as though the political upside now is completely, pun intended, trumping it's like the immediate desire to get Trump out of office is just, it's bigger than anything for anyone on the left right now.
And it's either trumping it, pun not intended, or swamping it, pun not intended, right? Because
But what about like defending Western civilization, the basic pillars of like
freedom? No, that doesn't exist anymore. We don't, because we're postmodernists, we don't believe that there are any pillars anymore. The pillar is what you create.
This conversation though, like that's some Jordan Peterson influence I hear there. Like we're starting to figure this stuff out, right? This little intellectual dark web.
I hope so, but it is. It's not a dark web on purpose, right? We don't want it to be a dark web. I think most of us who want to have
that, you know, like the Huffington Post this stuff. Gives it, right? Sorry, what was that?
Yeah. They don't want this debate to happen.
Yeah, because it's so getting back to kind of the ultimate dovetail back into my book is the point of it is kind of trying to get ahead of this very, the millennial generation, it hasn't really found its voice yet. And I feel like this could be it. Like a new narrative where you get enough people understanding that we've been polarized and accepting that something kind of like mind control has been going on. So yeah, as the millennial generation starts to find its voice, I think this could be sort of the narrative that guides it. And all it is getting to the point where you realize that we are being intentionally polarized. But that it's not exactly this overarching conspiracy with all these people individually in on it. It's more like this giant momentum, this modus operandi that history is in. And there are actual institutions that came to power with this innate understanding that the way that you, what someone like Professor Chomsky would call manufacture consent, is by giving people a tribal a group identity to formulate, but then also to have what they call a common enemy that they share. So in America, the Democrats share the common enemy of this very exaggerated, hyperbolized vision of this like NASCAR loving, gun toting Bible thumper. And the Republicans share the common enemy of this like latte guzzling person who's, you know, belongs in Paris and cares more about immigrants than Americans. And the news industry, it has only one choice. So it's like mind control, but it's also, you keep in mind, it's just a war for human attention. And so people have studied the way the human mind works and the way that the tribal center is activated by this kind of this pattern of presenting the information in a dichotomy, left or right, conservative or liberal. And it's been so repeated and ingrained deeply into our psyches, because that's, again, a technique of propaganda. You can study this stuff. That now it's a legend, man. We can't break out of it. Like, it would be like getting rid of the hero's journey as kind of the template for superhero movies. It just wouldn't work, right? And so we're getting to the point where history is repeating itself. And the need to control the information this way is creating this specter where it almost feels like it's becoming more like it is exaggerated to get our attention and to make it easy for people to understand. But then it's like the fake narrative starts to take on a life of its own and it starts to become real. And I think what you see with the madness with this Kavanaugh hearing and the Salem witch trial, like just tone of it all, the hysteria that's taking over, is that we're reaching that point now where the polarized narrative is starting to like reap the consequences of this giant game that we've been sowing to keep people's attention on a political conversation.
Yeah, we're like levels down, right? It's because it's one polarized narrative that's like partly true, feeds into another one, and it feeds into another one, and it feeds into another one, until like you can't even come to a middle ground with somebody anymore, because they believe so many biased narratives, and both sides are pulling into these the core truth. They would have to unravel, you know, 15 different stories back to some core truth that is actually, you know, a bridged version of reality instead of just this dimensional shift that everybody's in.
Well, and I think another thing that the media is good at is, you know, you kind of talked about those tropes of the latte getting liberal with his, you know,
New York Times.
Yeah, he's got the New Yorker, and he's, you know, at a place that has only, you know, unisex bathrooms. And then you've got the other guy on the other side with the NASCAR and the Bible and the gun. You know,
you want to do the voice? You want to do the voice then?
The voice. Ain't no liberal gonna come in here and take away my bathroom.
But, and when in reality, it's way more boring than that. And like 80% of Americans are independent.
Oh yeah. But the media is good at bringing those guys on, right? And putting one of those in your face so that, you know, you can see, you know, Tucker Carlson facing the liberal professor with his latte. And you can see Rachel Maddow against the, Baptist minister from West Virginia that believes in firing his gun off at his sermons.
Yeah. And it's like this cartoonized version of both sides that gets so spotlighted and so emphasized over and over again that it kind of takes on this reality of it's in the practical sense, because that's how people, when they think of politics, they think, oh, the country's so divided. And it's because of what's in the spotlight, what's part of the system that's a magnet on our attention and a news industry that's controlled from the top down to keep the narrative polarized for multiple reasons.
For sure. All right. So circling back around to your book, because I do want to plug it a little bit. And it sounds like you have one book that's out now. Can you tell the listeners sort of about, you know, where they can go about getting that book? And then your other one, the Depolarized book, when we can expect it on shelves and where to get that?
Yeah. So the book that you mentioned that's out is called The Manifesto Murders. And it's pretty much a very timely FBI detective thriller about an obsessive murderer who he's leaving these little burnt edged parchment papers with these voice recordings at each murder scene. And he's basically set out to make it his mission to take down the deep state. And then the book actually follows this FBI detective who, while tracking the killer, is kind of going through this series of internal conflicts about what's going on and thinking strategically about what he really should do. And I think it's really kind of struck a chord with people. And the book that I'm writing now and that I actually want to make into a podcast that I think you guys should come on at some point is called Depolarized. And it's my first nonfiction book. And it, I think I'm actually going to make it a book film hybrid as well, because I think the more we can distill that message about how we're being kind of mind controlled and how it's not really about taking the, you know, us versus them narrative, Republicans versus Democrats, and then turning it on the mind. So it's not like we're just finding some new scapegoat. It's like you said, it's deeper than that. And you start to feel like you're getting your mind back from this insanity when you really get into the new narrative in Depolarized. Really, I'm really excited about it, if you can't tell.
Yeah, no. And do you have any kind of timeline on when we might be able to pick that up?
Yeah, I'm a little early in the production cycle to be plugging it directly, but I write fast generally, and I'm actually recording the audiobook as we speak. So early 2019 is a good, right after this crazy election.
Awesome.
Well, I hate to be the one to tell you this, if you didn't already know, Trisha steamed on. I turned a daggering stare upon my partner now. She was clearly going off script. This was not going to be good. But your husband was involved in an elite orgy last night at a mansion, not unlike the one west of here. And there was a long silence. I got to tell you, so that was hilarious. I read that. I reread that a couple times because I thought it was so funny. So I read the first couple chapters of the book.
That's a good little hook. That's a good little hook.
Yeah. And I enjoyed it and I started reading more of it. So I think I made it to chapter 7, but it's interesting.
Fast, right?
It pulls
you in. Yeah.
And awesome, where's the best place for listeners to pick that up? Cause it's out.
So right now the best place to pick it up is on Amazon and my personal website. That's just my name, Nick Aris, NICKAIRUS.com. And Amazon, I think, is a little bit more inexpensive at this point for the shipping and handling. And I'm in the process of getting a distribution deal. And it's because of all the amazing readers out there who have gotten through the end of the book and been so enthusiastic about it that they've posted their reviews on Amazon. And it's pretty clear that people like the book.
Well, that's awesome. And if you get it from Amazon, Bezos will get his cut too. So that works out for everyone.
Feed the beast.
Yeah. Well, we will feed make sure listeners, we're going to post links to Nick's website and his books in the show notes for this episode. We'll also, when your new book comes out, just let us know. We'll plug that for free for you. No problem. We believe that,
you know, it'd be cool. Maybe it'd be cool to have a follow-up to this.
Yeah, for sure.
I think around that time
That would be great. And we could talk about how the elections went and,
or how the streets are all burning, the cars are on fire and everyone's screaming.
The message will be more poignant than ever.
All right. Well, we really appreciate you coming on, Nick, and sharing sort of your story. And then also it's always great to know that someone else is out there fighting this battle with us to try and depolarize the American people. So we will be sure to stay in contact with you and let the listeners know what you're up to. There a Twitter handle or anything like that? Anything else you want to give?
Yeah, I keep it simple. It's just at Nick Aris.
Well, there you go. You can't get any simpler than that, folks. As always, you can find us on Twitter at Daily Circus Pod. You can find me, that's Zed, on Twitter at Real Zed. That's R-E-E-L-Z, like a movie reel. And Red, when you're not busy coming up with your new murder mystery deep state novel that you're going to copy from Nick, where can they find you?
Yeah, I actually downloaded his book illegally on the internet, so sorry. I do apologize for that one. But, no, I'm just kidding. I'm a Red TDC.
All right. And of course, you can always find us on Patreon at Daily Circus Pod over on Patreon. If you love what you're listening to, go over there, throw us some money. That will ensure that you get more of it more frequently. If we can get up to our first goal of $500 per month, that's per month, not episode, we will start doing two of these a week, which you're going to get two this week anyway, because we're going to do this one here with Nick. And then we actually have another whole episode that we're going to be doing on the Kavanaugh, which may or may not be released before this one, depending on what order we release this week's episodes. So I just realized that may not do anybody any good that's listening to
this. That's going
to
be a funny outro. I hope you hear this second.
So, you know, the thing that you can do that will help us the most, actually, other than sending us your money on Patreon, something that helps almost as much, go over to iTunes, smash that 5-star button, and then just write anything in the comments. It doesn't matter what it is. Something going into the comment actually, it ranks up higher on the iTunes algo and helps us out tremendously. So we appreciate you listening, guys, and we will see you next time on The Daily Circus.
Looking for a great new podcast where both of the hosts also think Jeff Sessions' stance on marijuana is ridiculous?
Oh no, the gun went off. Somehow that's related to marijuana.
Well, you know, I heard that marijuana can pull triggers.
Well, it is the gateway gun.
A podcast that takes political issues seriously, but also isn't afraid to have some fun.
All right, let's start with PETA and how they took over the movie.
Chewy cooks a pork!
The Daily Circus Podcast brings you interviews on events you won't believe are happening in 2018 America.
I was getting ready to play some video games with some friends, actually, when I get a call from my mom saying that there are 6 police cars in her yard wanting to talk to me.
So, 6 police cars.
While you're playing video games.
The Daily Circus isn't afraid to get into the real issues on gun control.
I want the government to be afraid to start a civil war. I think everyone should want the government to be afraid to start a civil war. I mean, we would all like individuals also not to want to start a civil war.
And of course, the Daily Circus covers the latest on Donald Trump.
Because his ego is bruised, because if there was Russian interference in the election, even if he had no part in it, then that somehow to him means that he's got to be sad now and go.
The Daily Circus Podcast. Click one of the links below to subscribe and get informed.